Okay, let's jump in. Today we're doing a deep dive into what the RAFT program calls Liberating Mindfulness. We're heading straight into Chapter 36. And the mission, really, is to get a handle on how knowing the actual state of our mind can be, well, a shortcut to freedom.
It's such a crucial pivot point in the journey. The whole thing is really captured in that opening quote from the Dhammapada.
Right. Just as a Fletcher straightens an arrow, so the wise straighten their mind.
Exactly. We're moving beyond just, you know, fixing problems as they pop up and into this much more sophisticated skill of mental calibration.
And just for context, we are deep into the F of the RAFT program. It's probably worth a quick reminder that RAFT, and that's just pronounced like the word RAFT stands for.
Recognize life's inherent pain.
Abandon harmful cravings.
Freedom from cravings, aversions, and confusions.
And then T, which is train body-mind ethics.
And this F stage, freedom, it's fundamentally about personally experiencing that freedom is real. It's available. We've done the grounding work with the body, the healing with feeling tones. And now we turn to the mind itself.
The third anchor of mindfulness.
That's it. This is where the work gets really interesting.
Because we're no longer just watching what the body is up to or what feelings are bubbling up. We're diving straight into the minds. What? It's architecture.
I like that. It's architecture, it's quality, it's tone. If your mind is a ship, this is learning to read the inner sky. You have to know the weather inside to steer yourself wisely.
Okay, so let's get into the formal practice here. This is the third foundation of mindfulness, or Satinipatthana. Mm-hmm. I think when people first hear this, they imagine it's about, you know, endless navel gazing.
Right, getting lost in your own thoughts. But the RAFT program is so clear about this. It's not about the content of the thought.
That is the critical distinction, isn't it?
It's everything. So if you're angry, the content is the whole story of why you're angry, who did what, why it's unfair. Liberating mindfulness just. It sidesteps that whole drama.
And asks what instead?
It asks, how is the mind right now? Is it agitated? Is it tight? Is it feeling burdened? You're noting the context, the state, not the story itself.
And this instruction comes directly from Gautama, the Buddha, in the Satipatthana Sutta. He says we have to know the mind directly.
Experientially. That direct knowing is how we get a taste of the third reality, which is Nirodha, the cessation of that suffering.
And the heart practice for this stage fits so perfectly. It's appreciative joy, Mudi.
Yes. It's not just feeling happy. It's this deep gladness for the potential for clarity that we all have. It's the joy you feel when you actually see that clarity pop through, even for a second.
What I find fascinating, and maybe a bit daunting at first, is the detail Gautama went into. He didn't just say, know your mind. He gave us a map.
A diagnostic map. That's a great way to put it. The eight pairs of mind states.
Right. They're basically a tool to see the difference between a mind that's, you know, stuck on autopilot and a mind that's resting in its natural state.
By learning to spot these polarities, we stop getting so lost in all the confusion in the middle.
So let's touch on a couple of these pairs, because they can sound quite abstract. We're told to see if the mind has lust or wanting, that's saraga, or if it's free from it, vitaraga.
Exactly. And the same for aversion or ill will, sadosa, versus being free from it. So if you're plotting something out of greed, the mindfulness practice isn't to analyze the plot.
You just know.
Mind with wanting. And then when that wanting fades for a moment, you notice that too. Mind free from wanting. That's vitaga. It's a direct experience.
Then it moves into the mind's quality or its power, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it contracted, sukkata? Or is it scattered, vikita?
Yes. And this is so practical. If your mind is buzzing all over the place, you just gently note scattered. If it's tight with worry, you note contracted.
And you contrast that with what he calls the Mahagatai mind, the developed or great mind.
Which is expansive and open versus the undeveloped one. And then, is it concentrated or unconcentrated? Liberated or unliberated?
Okay, but hold on. I can see the value in recognizing a clear mind. But what if I go through the checklist and my mind is just scattered, contracted, and definitely avimutta, unliberated? Doesn't naming all that just make you feel worse?
That is such an important question, and it gets right to the heart of the insight.
So what's the answer?
The reason you look in such detail is so you can directly recognize and get familiar with the mind when it is free. If you only ever notice the bad stuff, freedom just stays some abstract idea.
Oh, I see.
But when you notice that tiny gap where greed wasn't there, or that moment of focus, or, and this is the key, that flicker where the mind felt vimitta, liberated, you are tasting the third reality. You're learning what the safe harbor feels like.
So it's not self-monitoring, it's self-calibration.
Yeah.
You're learning the feeling of open to guide you.
Exactly. Stephen Batchelor calls this contemplative mindfulness. You're not just watching reactivity. You are learning to actively rest in non-reactivity itself.
You're stabilizing that space.
And by stabilizing and expanding that space, you create the conditions for the new ethical possibilities of stage T to even show up.
Let's bring back our RAFT metaphor. So the captain and the crew, that's us, are using these eight pairs as our instruments to read the inner sky.
So we can sail wisely. The whole point is to strengthen your capacity to dwell in that space of non-reactivity, the Nibbana Dhatu. Mindfulness becomes your navigation system, not just a problem alarm.
So for someone who's used to, say, focusing on their breath or body sensations, what are the really practical shifts to make this happen? Can you walk us through an example?
Sure. The biggest hurdle is getting fused with the story. So let's say a stressful email lands in your inbox just before lunch.
Sure.
The immediate reaction is all content. This is so unfair. I have to reply right now. Here's what I'll say. The mind gets hot, tight, rigid.
And the shift is you just...
You stop analyzing. You stop composing that angry email in your head. And instead, you just ask, what is the quality of my mind right now?
You might notice
mind with aversion, so sadosa, and mind contracted, sakita. You're shifting from the external trigger and the story to the internal weather.
And you just label it, aversion is present. That sounds so simple, but I guess the moment you name it as a state, you've already created a bit of distance.
That's the engine of liberation right there. You just use friendly recognition. Mind bright. Mind planning. And crucially, you see it all arising and passing. These are just temporary conditions like clouds, Hanukkah.
This sounds a lot like the insight of Anatta, or not self.
It's the practical application of it. Instead of I am anxious, which is an identity statement.
You sense anxiety is present in the mind. It's observing versus owning.
Exactly. And that sets you up for the next step, which is to recognize and rest. When you notice that aversion frits away or the contraction eases up, you don't just jump to the next thing.
You pause.
You linger for maybe three breaths. You let the feeling of that clear, free space settle in. You let a little bit of wonder or appreciative joy arise. That's how you stabilize freedom.
I have to say, that sounds incredibly hard to do when you're actually stressed. My first instinct when I'm scattered is to fight it, not to wait around and rest in its absence.
Oh, it is hard. That's why the program calls it training. It's a commitment you make, moment by moment. But the payoff is huge. Every time you rest in that clarity, you're building a neural pathway. You're making it easier for your mind to find its way back there the next time a storm hits.
Which brings us to the science. It's really compelling how this ancient inner map aligns so well with what we're learning about the brain today.
It's basically a very high-level form of metacognition, the brain observing its own operations.
And what's happening neurologically?
You're strengthening the neural circuits between your prefrontal cortex, your center for self-awareness, and the amygdala, the emotional hub. And a stronger connection there means, well, better and faster emotional regulation.
So by consistently stepping back from the content of our stress, we're literally quieting that inner narrator.
You're turning down the volume on the default mode network, the DMN. That's the part of the brain that's always spinning stories about me, myself, and I. When you shift from the drama to the context, you just starve it of fuel.
It's amazing. When Gautama described the Mahagatesita, the great expansive mind, it sounds like he was describing what we now call a stable, integrated nervous system.
He was describing a mind that's not trapped by its immediate reactions. And in modern psychology, that correlates directly with things like creative flow states. When your mind is neither contracted nor scattered, it's capable of so much more.
You see this idea of observing thoughts in therapies like CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, but this feels a bit different.
That's a great point. It is different. CBT often tries to challenge the content of the thought, you know, asking, is this thought really true?
Right.
Liberating mindfulness is much closer to something like metacognitive therapy or MCT.
And how does that work?
MCT is all about developing detached mindfulness. You don't argue with the thought. You're not trying to fix it. You just see the thought, I am a failure, not as a truth, but as a transient mental event. You observe the state, self-aversion present, without getting tangled up in it.
The freedom is in the observation itself.
Precisely. And that idea of seeing it as a state rather than my identity, that echoes through so many philosophical traditions.
The Stoics come to mind.
Absolutely. Their idea of prosoche, or vigilant attention to your inner state, that was the fundamental virtue. Or even Spinoza, who argued that joy increases the mind's power to act.
How does that connect?
Well, when you replace the confusion about your inner weather with a clear understanding of it, your power to respond wisely instead of just reacting. It increases dramatically. That is existential freedom.
So if we were to synthesize all this, liberating mindfulness is the art of knowing the mind by its quality, not its stories.
And allowing that clear seeing to be the liberation. It's remembering what Gautama taught. The mind is luminous, but defiled by incoming impurities. Every moment of clear seeing lets that natural luminosity shine through.
And using our RAFT metaphor one last time, it's the difference between fighting the waves all the time, which is the necessary work in the beginning, and calibrating your inner navigation so well that the ship just rests naturally on the water.
You move from fighting the storm to resting in the stillness that was always there underneath the surface. That shift from effort to alignment is what this is all about.
For everyone listening who wants to go deeper on this, we should be clear about where the RAFT program comes from. The RAFT to Freedom workbook was written by Dr. Catherine Jacob and Vince Cullen.
And in just a wonderful act of generosity, they are making all 66 chapters available completely free online. It's a truly remarkable resource. You can find everything at rafttofreedom.org.
Before we sign off, we always like to leave you with a little something to reflect on, kind of journaling prompt from the program itself.
So take a moment to reflect on a strong emotion you felt recently. Maybe it was frustration or fear. And then consider this question. What changed when you saw it as a mind state rather than my feeling? Just notice the difference between observing the weather and claiming ownership of the storm.
We'll close today with a quote that really captures the heart of this entire practice.
When mindfulness sees clearly, the heart discovers it was never truly confined. Christina Feldman.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We really encourage you to explore the RAFT program and continue your own journey toward finding that clarity and peace.